The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Well, Katov, here we are in the 9 days, and I've always wondered to myself why we make such a big deal of the tragedies in our history without perhaps making enough of some of the things to celebrate. We always seem to be fasting and thinking about all the tragic events that have befallen our people over the centuries. But the celebrations, I'm not sure. I think we need to somehow balance it out, but I'll leave that up to you guys.
Step that up a little bit when the time is right.
And one of the other things that I wanted to talk about, Howard, I'm guessing that many of the participants of the Maccabi Games, whether they were sportsmen or supporters or administrative people who were in Israel over the past few weeks, are now slowly but surely returning home.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've had a chance to get some impressions from some of them, but I wondered to myself whether the feeling that they had was something similar to the experience that you had when you came to visit, and whether there was a sense of, I don't know, perhaps a little bit of concern about the security situation, perhaps a little sense of not being quite as connected as before.
So, in fact, the security situation wasn't something that was relevant to people now. I don't think people felt that in the same way that I did. The general comments were, on the positive side, absolutely incredible to see the energy in Israel, the amount of building, the positivity in terms of industry. I think that was overwhelming. The other aspect was the cost. The cost was absolutely outrageous, and almost everybody had to try and find a way of staying with people, with family, or doing something to try and mitigate the costs, because they were very high. And then on the other side, I think a few people did, certainly that I spoke to, did find the brashness, maybe, and which has always been an Israel thing, of course, but there was a sense from a number of people that it didn't quite feel as warm and welcoming as it has in the past, and perhaps that'll change as everybody gets used to each other following COVID. But I think it really just depended on everybody's own experience. Some didn't feel that at all. Some did feel that, and which I would imagine is what it's about. It's the very personal experience when one travels.
I was sort of thinking. I was thinking to myself again about, you know, some of the feelings that you had, and I just wondered to myself whether Israel as a country, as an environment, is perhaps maturing a little, taking on more of what goes on generally around the world, and therefore becoming slightly less unique in its feeling because it's of its more of its connection, a metropolitan connection to the rest of the world. And perhaps whereas once upon a time when you went to visit your grandparents and you were so accustomed to that smell of the chicken soup and the certain old-fashioned things that you were accustomed to when you visit that environment, so it was with Israel, that people came here and were expecting some sort of traditional old-fashioned kind of historical things, being the Jewish country that it is. And now that feeling is somewhat replaced by its connection to the international world more than its connection to historical Jewish values. And when you come here, you expect it to be Hamish and chicken soup. And you come here and you find that it's kind of closer to New York or London than it is to that Hamish environment. And I just wonder whether that's something of a disappointment to people. I know that Kathy said, you know, is Israel a Jewish country, or is it a country for Jews? And, you know, she kind of drew a distinction between that in one of the discussions that I had. And I actually think that it's both. And I think that as much as there is this connection to the international community, and therefore it comes with a certain lack of personal touch, a certain lack of personal connection to the whole Jewish thing, but it still is very much a Jewish country. And it's just becoming more and more international, more and more metropolitan. And is that a bad thing?
Very interesting. And it might well be the distinction that we've been looking for. But fascinating. I'd love to hear from you, 34519 or 0618951019. If you have just been to Israel, I would love your impressions of from following your visit. There is some quite significant news. Israel has this morning taken special preventative security measures. That's in the south around the Gaza Strip following the killing last night of a senior member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and the arrest of a number of other senior activists. What's been going on? What were these clashes?
Well, there were some activities that went down in the area of Jenin last night. So not even in the Gaza Strip area, but more in the Judean Samaria area and very much focused on the Arab town of the city of Jenin. There were apparently some arrests in particular. I mean, even though there was the death of one of the activists, I think that most of the security precautions measures that are being taken to the arrest around Palestinian Islamic Jihad commander for the Samaria area, Sam al-Saadi. He was arrested last night along with his son-in-law, Ashraf Zidane Mohammed Aija. They were arrested in a raid that saw some quite heavy clashes, not only in the home where they were arrested, but indeed with others in the local area. And obviously the IDF troops went in with a specific task of carrying out this arrest. But as a result of the death of one individual at least, and maybe a few more, and of course the arrest of these very, very senior individuals, the IDF and the government this morning have decided to take quite significant precautionary measures around the south for fear that there will be some retaliation, perhaps even some rocket fire from Gaza during the course of today. There have been some threats that there will be a retaliation against the events of last night, as a result of which certain roads around the Gaza Strip have been closed to traffic. The train line has been closed towards the south of Israel. The Israel Railways announced earlier today that they were closing train lines, that trains will not run on certain routes, and that there is just a general expectation, a general girding of a response from the Gaza Strip today in order as a potential retaliation against the events of last night. So what exactly happened last night is not something that's very publicly discussed at the moment. And what's more in the news right now is about, you know, what the expected response might be. So definitely very, very high expectations of a response, a very significant security alert that has been thrown around, particularly the area of the Gaza Strip. And so we will just see how events pan out today. One of the other things that has happened is that the area's border crossing has been closed. This is quite a significant step because, as we've discussed in recent weeks and months, there's been a significant opening of the crossing to allow people from Gaza to come to Israel to work on a daily and a weekly basis. So by closing the crossing, it effectively prevents those people from moving backwards and forwards from Israel into the Gaza Strip for their daily jobs. So there is a significant piece of action, a significant preventative piece of action that has gone on, which has been in operation already from the early hours of this morning. And as I say, we will see how things pan out today, and whether things may well be a little bit released. There will be a little bit of a relaxation of some of these security issues during the course.
Yeah, very concerning. It's a massive step that Israel has taken, and not one that is very common. Must be based on real concerns. Iran has announced that it will be activating hundreds of new centrifuges in the coming days. Does this present a direct threat to Israel?
Well, you know, again, the whole Iranian situation just continues to roll up and potentially escalate each and every day. The latest announcement by Iran comes just hours after the United States announced that they would be implementing new sanctions against Iran's oil trade. These sanctions are sanctions which are supported by Israel because they have a substantial negative impact on the Iranian economy. And of course, the Iranian economy is very much what is driving and funding many of the renegade groups, particularly groups like Hamas in the Gaza Strip, and of course Hezbollah to the north in Lebanon, and also funding a lot of the activity that's going on in the southern part of Syria near to the Israeli border. So to the extent that the Iranian economy can be damaged, Israel welcomes that because they see that as potential, as a potential way to limit the extent to which Iran is able to fund all of these groups that are so closely associated with Iran. Having said that, because Iran likes to keep a sort of an equivalent situation, try to respond to everything that is done in order to impact it, in order potentially to damage it. They decided to respond to the announcement of these new sanctions by activating hundreds of new and more advanced IR-6 and IR-1 centrifuges to enrich uranium. Mm. And we understand that this is due to take place over the next 10 days to 2 weeks, something like that, that these new centrifuges will be activated. And depending on who you believe and how the interpretation is made about what this could mean, there are people who are suggesting that the activation of these new centrifuges could allow Iran to produce enriched uranium enough to produce up to 5 nuclear weapons in the space of a year. Oh, and there are some people who are suggesting that these new centrifuges could be enough to produce a nuclear weapon even within the space of 1 month. So we're not exactly sure how this will impact Iran's ability to produce a nuclear weapon. But interestingly, there is also a report that suggests that the activation of these new centrifuges is not of significant commercial value, because Iran continues to maintain that the nuclear program is really all about more commercial issues, more about producing electricity and civilian use rather than for military purposes. And yet, it seems as if though these new centrifuges won't necessarily have a significant effect on their so-called civilian use, but could have a significant effect on their ability to produce nuclear weapons. So once again, really a significant threat to Israel. We shouldn't underestimate the threat that this presents. And yet again, the world seems to be unable to respond in any significant way. But I have little doubt that Israel is following this very, very carefully indeed. And I'm not suggesting that there will be an immediate response of any sort, but I'm expecting that Israel probably has some plans where they've already thought about the possibility of this happening, given that those centrifuges have been available for activation. They haven't just arrived today or yesterday or tomorrow. These are already ones that have been pre-prepared, waiting for the moment, and potentially they might already have been activated, but Iran is just using this opportunity to somehow give a response, a public response, when in fact on the ground, perhaps not a great deal is changing. But there is no doubt at all that this represents a significant threat in terms of its ability to produce nuclear weapons.
What's so strange is whilst Iran is busy saying that no, it's not for military purposes, at the same time it's threatening Israel, it's threatening even New York and saying that it'll flatten New York in a matter of no time. How does this, how do we not see, how does the world not see that this presents a real and almost imminent danger?
Well, I think that it's not about the world not seeing. I think it's all about what people choose to see or choose to take note of. Oil prices being the way they are at the moment, and with the lack of supply, that's so significant that some people just choose to overlook this in the interests of, you know, maintaining their access to Iranian oil, which for some economies is more important than the potential threat that this nuclear program brings.
Yeah, it's just very, very strange. I would have anticipated that this would have been dealt with some time ago, but in the meantime, it still continues, which is quite surprising in my view. I would have thought this would have been put to bed in terms of a military action, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. A new law further restricts the use of cash in Israel. What restrictions are included in the new law?
So this is part of a whole series of new laws that have been implemented in Israel in order to try to counter money laundering, criminal activity, and financial transactions which are not according to the law, either because the source of the money is questionable or because there is not proper taxes being paid, the classic money laundering situation. The new law was already implemented starting yesterday. And this new law restricts further the amount of cash that can be used in a single transaction. Up until now, the previous amount that people could use for cash in a single transaction was 11,000 shekels, about $3,200. That's now been slimmed down to 6,000 shekels, which is $1,700. And what that means is that if you're going to go and buy something or enter into any type of business transaction, anything up to 6,000 shekels can be transacted using cash, but anything above that is illegal in terms of transacting cash, and it needs to be done either by bank transfer or by credit card or by money wire or something, a check, potentially something like that, rather than using piles of cash. And slowly but surely, we are seeing more and more of a squeeze on cash transactions, and for obvious reasons, because obviously the use of cash doesn't necessarily have to be properly documented, whereas the moment it is in the form of a money wire or a credit card transaction or a check transaction, then the details of both who is paying and who is receiving the money have to be registered as part of the records of the transaction. And so there's no way of getting away from that particular fact. And of course, the tax authorities equally have the ability to follow those transactions. So this is becoming more of a thing, not only in Israel, by the way, but this is certainly a trend around the world. And I'm not quite sure how people locally in South Africa see all of this, because my impression is that cash is still very much a thing that is used. But here in Israel, the use of cash is dwindling down. And in fact, it was an interesting exercise that was carried out recently, which stopped a number of people in the street and simply asked them how much cash they have in their wallet at that particular moment in time. And there were some fascinating answers in terms of the younger generation having zero cash in their wallet at all. People walking around with their Apple Pay or their Google Pay or a credit card, and that's it on them in terms of the ability to get around and to have to pay for things. Some of the older generation more inclined to carry a few coins and some notes in their wallets, but really less and less use of cash and more use of online. I mean, there are all kinds of different apps, not only the Apple Pays and the Google Pays and things like that, but all kinds of payment transactions. There's a thing called Bit that you can just simply send money to somebody else's telephone number over your mobile phone. It can be used for tiny amounts, 10, 20, 50 shekels, whatever, people who want to get together to buy a present as a group for somebody, generally bit the money to each other. That's very commonly used here. And there are many, many other apps like that allow you to do that. So the use of cash is clearly on the way out, and the use of online payment systems very much a thing of the future. What do the listeners think about all of that?
Yeah, it's so interesting, because there is definitely a trend away from cash here as well, that we're starting to see a lot of technologies allowing, as you say, the different ideas of how people are moving cashless. And certainly I've noticed myself is that very, very often I'll have absolutely not 1 cent on me, because you've got your phone, you've got your credit cards, you actually don't need cash anymore. So there's definitely a trend here in South Africa as well away from cash. Just to come back to your earlier question, Laura says, I was in Israel in July. My thoughts, it was exorbitant, but full of life, a thriving economy. People are out and about living life as always. Lots of political opinions. Restaurants were full despite the cost. Beaches were vibey, but life is hard, I guess, as always, but it is being lived. And I think that does, to some extent, sum up a lot of what people are saying. Somebody else is saying that whoever we asked if they've settled, these are ex-South Africans, the standard answer is our children are happy, which I think is quite an interesting comment. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it is 8:01. We'll definitely continue this conversation tomorrow at 7:45.